Hello.
Hi, Molly. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
You know, living my best life.
That is all I wanted to hear. That is all I wanted to hear. Well, thank you for joining me on episode, I should know, 20, maybe 30 this time?
Sure.
Let's just go with it.
Let's
but
go
thank
with
you
it.
For joining me on the Untalented podcast. Let's go straight into it with this or that.
All right, let's
always
do it.
Always fun.
Let's
you ready?
It. Yep.
Born ready. Chocolate or crisps?
I'm sorry, what's the first thing?
Chocolate or crisps?
Oh, chocolate, sorry. What you'll know from this podcast is that I'm American, and so English words sometimes don't translate. That was chocolate for Americans. Chocolate. Yes, chocolate.
Leading or doing?
Doing.
Progressive or innovative?
Ooh. The second one, which is actually one of my trigger words. It's hard for me to say, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
I'm not going to ask you to divulge on that. Don't worry.
That would be an American making an ass of herself.
Photos or videos?
That's a hard one too. Photos.
Okay. Intuition or insights?
Intuition.
Films or books?
Films.
Winter or summer?
Summer.
Cats or dogs?
Definitely cats. Absolutely. Meow, meow.
I am shocked by that.
I have three cats.
Okay, that makes it less shocking.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I mean, cats are growing on me. I was always a person who'd be like, no cats, just dogs. But yeah, they are growing on me. But
dogs always love you. Like, it's unconditional love. Cats, you got to earn that love.
Yeah, and then it feels more special, right?
Yeah.
Fair. Ambition or comfort?
Ambition.
Skill or fame?
Skill.
Nice. You'll be pleased to know that is over.
Phew.
No more this or that.
Sorry.
Well, thank you so much, Reagan, for joining me today. Let's get straight into it with who was the first person that made you feel talented?
Let's go way back into my history. That would be my art teacher from high school, Julie Jarkey, which I still communicate with. Actually, I'm not going to give you years later because that would definitely put an age on me. She was one of those people that just saw who I could be, mm-hmm. and then just kind of pointed me in the right direction to like, this is what you could do. These are the type of schools you could go to. This is the portfolio you'll have to do. And mm-hmm. just kind of, she was always that guiding light. And I think I had art through my bones from a very young age, but she was the one who kind of like, nestled in and goes like, you're going to be my project.
Yeah, nice. I think we get quite a lot of people saying about teachers, and it's so important to have that figure so early on to say, this is what I can see potential of you being good at this, and this is how to do it. Because I think there's like always that lost in translation part of like, how do I get to making this a career, or how do I get to being like successful at this, that it's just something I enjoy type of thing.
Yeah, I do think, well, I mean, we're all supposed to be teachers, right? Mm-hmm. Like people, some people learn by watching and seeing, but most people have to be told, they have to be like shown, but with words and actions, as opposed to I'm just kind of mirroring what I'm seeing outside there, mm-hmm. And I'm kind of picking it up. I mean, props to the people that do that, because I'm like, oh, you're a hero. You didn't need to be told anything. You just kind of like saw it and did it. But it's like kind of like, I guess, a gymnast seeing a back tuck and then going like, I can do that, and just doing it, as opposed to someone going, hey, you know, if you throw your shoulders back and you like engage a core, mm-hmm. you'll be able to like flip. Weirdly went into a cheerleading space.
Are you telling me that? And I'm like, I still would not be able to do that. No way. No way at all.
With practice, anything is possible.
Very true. But hopefully next time we catch up, I'll be telling you that I've done one. That would be more than impressive. How do you think that aided you into getting to where you are now, like at the sort of early stages of career and after school and all of that side of things?
I was as a poor kid, and she's like, this is what you're going to have to do. These are actions you're going to have to take to get a scholarship, because my mom, single mom, wouldn't be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, this is the only kind of path that you have right now. And I'm like, all right, cool. Just give me the task I have to do, and that's what I'll do. So she got me involved, and I'm going to totally nerd out here for a second. It's called VICA, Vocational Industrial Clubs of America. And it was an after-school program that was for technical kind of things. Like, it could be for everything from advertising to refrigeration repair to public speaking. It like mm-hmm. kind of went to the vocational side, and kind of you could hone and craft that. I went in super deep, talked about advertising, like took advertising things at that a young age, a high school age, but then also became the Vika state president because, again, I'm a super, I'm always in. When I'm in, I'm totally in.
You're in.
So then like that kind of at a very young age taught me leadership and how to kind of speak at a certain level and to be encompassing and bring people in. But it also taught me like what I can do, what the possibility is. So then when I kind of was going to get a scholarship and go to an art college, that didn't seem scary anymore because it kind of gave me the tools to, because my mom worked in a factory. She didn't have, like, she was hugely like strong woman, but, and she gave me that. And, you know, that's what parents do. They like, they give you their best traits and you like, you move on and you do that. But she couldn't give me kind of the, I guess the business side and the industry side, because she didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And that's what my art teacher did.
Yeah. I think that's amazing as well, that it was kind of not like a make or break, but you have to do this. So you just like got stuck in and did it.
Yeah.
And then actually did it to probably so much beyond the means of what you needed to do it. It was like, I know that this is the way, so I'm going all in.
I'm a little bit of an overachiever that way. But if you're going to do it, do it.
Do it. Yeah.
Like, don't go half-ass. What's the point?
Yeah, so true. And I like, as well, I think I've spoken to my sort of friends or colleagues about the parental side of things, of like, there's so much stuff that you want to lean on them for advice and support, but you get to a certain age and you realize, wait, they actually just don't know.
Yeah.
Or they don't know how to support me on these conversations or have any idea like what it is that I need to do or how to do it. But then it's the flip side of what else they offer you in the support and everything like that. I remember kind of getting to that point and just thinking, oh God, they don't know everything and they can't help me with everything. Yeah. What am I meant to do?
But I think, okay, the parents that succeed are the ones that go like, I don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I can help you in. And I can show you the path or put someone in front of you who maybe knows someone who knows someone who can actually help you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lot easier, especially when you're young, for adults to kind of find other adults that might be in the industry that can, you know, kind of lead you and guide you and give you a little bit more information. And that's what parenting is all about. I'm not the all-knowing. I mean, I'm a mom, but I don't know everything. So right now my son is totally into math, and my husband and I, who are both creative, we always joke that he's going to be like, he's totally going to be a mathematician or even an accountant, and we'll be like, we've been trying to make these little creatives. And then this person has come out and is like totally like math nerd, and that's awesome. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like he has a totally different side of the brain that we don't get, and so I can't help him in that. I can only kind of put people in front of him that can help that.
Yeah, and it's so interesting as well when, like you said, you kind of assume that you're gonna have these creative kids and they're gonna be the same, and then it's like, what? Wait a minute, you're like
happened?
A mad mathematician. God, that's brought back memories of me and my dad sitting at like our dining room table, slaving over my maths homework that neither of us understood on any level. It was kind of fine until I got to about 14, and it was like, I have no idea what this is either, and it was just the worst time.
I am looking forward. I was actually really good at geometry,
okay,
because it's more of a visual math. So I'm looking forward to that part, whether or not I remember it, but I'm sure it will come back. But like trigonometry, I was like, I'm out.
It is horrific. That used to actually give me nightmares at school. Like knowing that I had to do that the next day was awful.
Yeah,
but yeah.
I'm sure someone out there is going, what? I love trig. It's great. Good for you.
Yeah. Whoever that person is, please let us know.
And I may need a tutor soon. So just, you know, reach out to me.
Yeah, please get in touch. So you started, did you know about advertising before going onto that course? Or was that your first sort of birth into it?
I learned about advertising when I was 12, and I saw this really, now looking back, super lame commercial for Pepsi that had winged fighters that kind of went upside down, and one poured Pepsi into another one, totally not feasible, obviously. And I'm like, that's amazing. And at that time, I was spending time at my father's for a weekend, and my stepmom goes, you know, people make those. And I'm like, what? Because her brother happened to be in the business. And she's like, people come up with those ideas and they make those. And I'm like, boom.
Mind blown.
From that point on, 12 on, how do I do this? And just taking steps and finding people to tell me more.
That's so amazing.
My sister hated me for it.
Yeah.
And my brother, because they're like, you've always known what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. It's not my fault. Okay. It's not my fault. Pepsi got me from a very early age.
It's Pepsi's fault.
I mean, it's Pepsi's fault. And by the way, I do not drink Pepsi. I'm a Coke person.
I'm so happy you said that. Yeah. I would have been like, should we just stop?
We should stop. I won't even drink it. I'm like, no, I'd rather not.
It is mad though that you look back and think, that was probably a really lame ad, but how much it captivated you at that moment.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, that was advertising in the 80s. They probably were going for, it was right when Top Gun came out, like the first Top Gun. And it was, you know, going for a younger generation. So actually, they totally hit their target market because I'm like, what? This is amazing. Not that I would drink Pepsi, but like, you know, drink soda. Like, you'll be awesome. You might, you know, fly planes one day. I don't know. But I was in, hooked.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, they just don't know that it's a thing at all. Like, I mean, for me, I never knew advertising was a role until I started in recruitment. And it was that same brain moment of being like, people get paid to think of ideas and people get paid to do all of this surrounding it. And that wasn't until I was early 20s that I discovered that. Yeah. So it's such like a shame that it is so, if you know, you know, and not like actually spoken about more.
Yeah, I do wish, I mean, but that's our fault, right? That like we should be doing more outreach and going to, we go to universities and stuff like that. We talk to people, but they're already kind of like in their degree and we got to start young. Like we need to start, you know, at year 7 and go like, this is a possibility. Like I've volunteered to go to my son's school. Not that they've actually called me up. Come on, Elthorne, bring it in. To talk about, you know, advertising as an industry, because that's when you like start to like seed it in their mind. That's when it was seeded in mine. I'm like, and then I start asking questions how. Mm. Like it's not, you know, people don't go into school going, I want to be a vet. They like animals and like, what can I do around animals? Oh, I could be a vet. And then they start taking steps on like how to do that. Mm-hmm. I think advertising should be the same. What if?
Yeah, 100%. Because then, like you said, you begin to shape your next moves around it. And it takes away that like cloud almost that your siblings had of you always knew what you wanted to do. Like, yeah, because I was exposed to it. So therefore it was easier. So how did you take the step into like the industry professionally? What was your first move in that way?
Graduated college and got a job at Donor Advertising, which is in the States. And within a month, I sold a spot and I was shooting. And like, it was like, boom, 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 boom. Freaking awesome. Donor was it's an independent agency. It's huge. Great clients. My first client was Mazda. And they were a teaching hospital. They're a teaching agency where they're like, they just kind of threw you in the deep end and they were there to support. But they're like, go make, ask questions, we're here to answer. And that was super helpful because, yes, you have that fear, but also it was super exciting and you weren't going to kind of be in the background for years. Mm-hmm. You were just learning on the job.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, because there is so much of that, of interning and then junior and then still not making. And then how do I take that step up? Because I don't have the work to show for it, but I've not been given the opportunity to do that. And it's, the baptism of fire method is probably terrifying, but at least you're like in, up and running and making stuff from day dot.
It's the old, I do think I will be throwing out a lot of like, it's American thing, but it is, you know, throw in the deep end. I want to go in, I want to learn everything about it, and I come out thriving. I know not everybody's like that, and I'm very willing to like kind of take someone on a slower journey if that's the journey they want. But you don't know until the first time you get thrown in, right? So I'm like, kind of jump in the pool, the creative pool, the first time. And if you kind of sink and you're not at least learning a lot, then we'll change paths and kind of like see if maybe you need to take something that's a little bit slower on your on your way up into making. But I do think everyone should just jump in the first time.
Yeah, you kind of have to, don't you? Because if not, you never will.
Yeah, it gets too big and scary the longer you put it off.
Yeah, so true. And has that been like a part of your whole sort of journey of just been like roll your sleeves up and jump in into the
I'm next a maker, thing? Okay. Like, and I'm a doer, and I want to do less talking, more action. Mm-hmm. one of the things, like, we get into meetings where you're in a meeting, talk about the meeting that you just had. And I'm like, can I just start trying? And then I'll have questions and we'll be able to talk about this later. But right now it's just theoretical questions. Like, once I start trying to figure it out and answer those problems, I'll have real questions that I'll need answered, rather than like the kind of like, we're just talking about words on a page right now, rather than talking about the storytelling I'm about to make. Mm. So I'm a big doer, and I've taken every job that way. Just go. There's a difference between men and women where, like, they say, like, you know, men only need to know, like, what is it? Something like 20% of the CV, and women need to have like almost 100% before they'll go for something. Mm-hmm. I do kind of fall in the woman side where I'm like, oh, I don't fulfill all these qualifications, which are usually ridiculous. I mean, we've all read the job descriptions where you're like, come on now, that's a superhero and a unicorn. What are you talking about? Let's be a little bit realistic. But there will be things I don't know how to do. And I'm like, I watched this TED talk a long time ago, Amy Cuddy, and she's like, fake it until you believe it. And that really stuck with me, because mm-hmm. I'm like, not that you should fake everything, you know, obviously, but like, you know, it is deep inside. You probably can do it. You just think you can't. So it's like, there'll be a moment where you stop, you're just doing, and you're not faking anymore. Mm. Because you've already, like, you've kind of made that transition. And I go in, I'm like, all right, cool, I'll fake it until I believe it.
Yeah, and it's so important as well. Like, we obviously see so many job specs, job descriptions, and I speak with people who I've actively sought out to speak to about roles, and, well, I don't have this, or I don't have this, or yeah. I can't do this. And there's always going to be the element of, you just kind of have to trust that you can and you will, and actually sometimes that your other skills and expertise may even outweigh the need for that. And yeah, I think a lot of people forget that job descriptions have everything and anything that they could ever possibly want in a person in there, which yeah. is, and they even know it's unrealistic. And it's like, well, if we don't put it in there, then we'll never know if this yeah, person
if you don't
exists.
Ask, you don't know, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And they are allowed to ask for the world. But I mean, I'm sure you see it way more than I see it, but even you can see like a template at certain agencies where you're like, oh, it's funny that they've just taken like kind of the bottom paragraph off the requirements. Like, the CD has like, let's say, 4 paragraphs. And then, you know, as you go down to a senior creative, they're taking off the bottom paragraph.
Yeah.
And then and you're like, it's amazing that like everybody has the same skills, but you just add a couple more. Like, come on, there's differences in each of those roles, and they should be looked at differently.
100%. It's everything is so much more nuance when you yeah. actually get into the weeds of it. And I think, like myself, I send a job spec very last resort if people ask for it, and it's like, actually, let's just have a conversation about this. And it's just, it's so much more natural, and I actually think it's more reassuring for that person, because they're having a conversation about themselves and their yeah. skills, rather than doing it as like a checklist, which yeah, they will not have, because nobody has. So it's pretty crazy. So then I was keen to talk about, you've made quite a lot of pioneering work in the beauty space. Mm-hmm. There's the ad As Early as 5 for Dove, the non-issue for L'Oreal Paris. Like, tell us about them, but also how did you get to them, and how did they impact your career?
Okay, so it wasn't just me. Obviously, there's
yeah, of course.
So it's a team that creates things. I didn't get into the beauty space until pretty far along into my career. I was probably done like 15 years, and all of a sudden, I went to McCann, London, and there was a space in L'Oreal, the L'Oreal team. And I'm like, okay, cool. It's really hard. There's a lot of stereotypes when it comes to beauty, and especially mm-hmm. beauty with female creatives, that you get a pink book. So like a lot of creatives, especially creatives that have kind of are more art director focused and have like good design, like a higher kind of luxury design skill, you kind of start getting shoved into that area.
Yeah.
And so you kind of stay away a little bit. But I'm like, you know what? Beauty can be done differently. I think obviously it's so generic to say, everything can be done differently. But beauty was kind of interpreted one way. Mm. And I went in, and I had ECD at the time, Rob Brown, who said, like, you could change it up. And I just came at briefs differently than the way people or creatives from the beginning, like, started their career in beauty and kind of were brought up in beauty did. Because I had, you know, Mazda, Auto Trader, like Verizon Wireless. Like, I was doing comedy in the States and stuff like that. Just had different ways of tackling it. And I was an influencer on social. So I'm like, we need to be talking in the social space. Like, why are we just doing a TV ad? Like, I know those are important, but like, there's a whole world that's happening here and it's happening in our hand and we're not speaking in this space. And this is when kind of influencers were coming up. And I'm like, this is our audience. These are humans I can relate to. I love that L'Oreal uses, people like Helen Mirren and Jane Fonda. Like, they're amazing people and amazing humans in real life too. Mm. But they're up here, they're superstars, right?
Yeah, they're not like relatable.
An influencer, like I can relate to. That's someone that is authentically talking to me because I can see myself in that influencer. And so when we did things like True Match and we used 23 influencers represent 23 shades, that was very different for the time. And then we got to the non-issue and we're like, how do we talk about ageism in a way that's not like, hey, here's age perfect. You can put this cream on your face and you'll look younger, which is kind of the opposite of what we're saying. We're like, we kind of looked at the whole category and said like, wait a minute, like women aren't represented here. Like women of a certain age aren't represented here in print. Mm. And that's an unusual way to actually talk. I mean, L'Oreal obviously does a ton of ads, right?
Yes.
So, but they're seen in a certain way with a certain type. And we're like, what if there was a whole Vogue dedicated to talking about age in a new way. And having someone like Jane Fonda, who I think was 85 at the time on the cover, was completely new and completely unusual. And it stopped it and made people just consider and all of a sudden go like, wait a minute. I didn't realize now that I'm looking back at it, the media is only representing people a certain way. Because the thing is, it's like if it's in front of you, you're like, oh, I don't know what's going on. And then someone goes, hey, do you know that's only like, below 30s on covers? And you're like, wait a minute. Actually, now that I look at it and I'm actually taking it in, I do notice that there's no representation when it comes to 50 plus. And that should change. And then as soon as you open that like that door, that window, so to speak, you go in, you're like, we need to make change. And they have had multiple covers after that, plus 50. I mean, they had one, what was she, 106? This woman, like Vogue is push that forward. And obviously L'Oreal is, the age perfect range was made for that whole generation. And it's not just, I mean, it's pretty huge, like the span, like 50 up to like, until you're 100. And it's like, it was just a different way of talking about it. When it comes to Dove, obviously they're always paving the way for change. And a lot of times it just comes with things that are awareness. And that's great because we need to be kind of showed like the damaging side of social or, the positive side of social or like, what can be done and what changes we can make. But when it comes to the thing I worked on as early as 5, we found out that, little girls basically when they in this is for the States, by the way, by the time they get to school age, which is around 5, that's when they start to get discrimination for their natural hair. That's horrifying to think that like from that young age and from that point on, they'll be told how they should and can wear their hair. And so that was in conjunction with the Crown Act to try to change the law. And we got it up to a certain point, but that's where you're like, wow, I can make work. And it's, by the way, it's not just the advert that did this. Like it is the Crown Act that, started by these wonderful women. But you can actually change laws. Based on, bringing awareness to something. And that's when you're like, oh, shit, you can make a real difference with the work you do.
Yeah.
And not just, and by the way, like, I know I'm lucky that I can do that, but dude, I can sell some water too. And I'm cool with that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't all have to be like changing the world type work. I think if you have a balance of doing things that are really big and then doing things that are fun or just memorable in a different way kind of allows you to kind of just grow your storytelling.
100%. And I think we have this chat a lot of like, purpose doesn't mean changing the world. Purpose could mean to make someone laugh in the day. Like it's such a big scale. But I think through both of those, what you just explained, it's so much more just about awareness of like, let me raise awareness for something and people will act on it, or people will hear it, or people will see it. Like you said about the media, you just don't think about the fact of the lack of representation because it's all you see and all you digest. And then when something so big makes such a stand, it takes that to then think, oh my God, how have I never realized this before? How did you, or how was like the journey of almost convincing L'Oreal to make that and do that and push that forward? How did that sort of go?
Well, we did a hack.
Okay.
And actually I came up with that idea with my husband, which is the only time we worked together. The first and the last time we worked together.
It was quite peaked at that.
And no more.
Yeah, you're like, that was amazing. Let's just leave it at that.
And we went to it, and there was two ideas that came out of the hack that the clients liked.
Okay.
And we actually, there was a creative director, or was he ECD at the time, Julian, in France, and he kind of pushed, the client really liked them both, but liked one more. And he kind of pushed her to say like, hey, like, I think this one's better. And then luckily we had another client who knew Edward Enfield and kind of made that connection.
Amazing.
To Vogue. And then as soon as they heard, they're like, of course, why wouldn't we be doing this? Like, and then as soon as you have like an editorial powerhouse like that on board with your idea, it is run. I mean, L'Oreal is actually very good about like how jobs come in and out. They're like, it's kind of a 3-month cycle in and out. And like, because we have to, beauty industry changes so fast, not mm-hmm. the actual products themselves. I mean, there is innovation all the time, but like how it's represented and how it's talked about, it I think it moves faster than most industries, yeah. which is awesome because you like can do things, you know, at the rate of culture. But sometimes big ideas like that can get bogged down in the system.
Mm.
But then when you have something like Vogue was like, here's a deadline. This is the issue we're going to do it for. You're like, oh shit, everybody run.
Yeah, that's so true.
And just do it. But it did take, you know, it took London, us going to Paris to do the hack, took, you know, creatives there saying like, you know, this is the idea we should push.
Mm-hmm.
Then it took, you know, the collaboration of the client to talk to Vogue, and then everybody kind of coming on board and going like, together we're going to make this. It really was like a symphony of one team, one dream.
Yeah. And it's so beautiful as well when something like that, you don't really have time to think about it because you're just running with it and yeah. doing it. And then at the end, it's like, we made that. Like, we actually did that.
Yeah. When you look at it at the end and you're like I remember when we brought it in and we had bought a bunch of them, and like seeing their reading, I'm like, oh. And I'm sure the team at Vogue are like, every month they do that, right?
Yeah.
They're like, look at what I've made. But like to have a whole thing front to cover, telling this the same story. Not the same way. Like it all represented by 50 plus, and mm-hmm. like having that kind of that slant throughout the whole thing. It's just something that wasn't seen before. And
yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty epic when you get it.
Oh, 100%. And also like even just in the fact that it's a physical publication, yeah. like that it's kind of mad to me that that is not the norm still, and like never really was, especially with TV and now with the, like the dawn of social and everything. It must feel so mad to just be able to hold something in your hands that you physically made and like thought up, which I think... It's a shame that a lot of people probably don't get that element now in advertising, but yeah, it just must hit so much harder, I think.
Yeah, our physical is, I mean, I know there's people, designers who like, they make things, right? They're people who have made this, and yeah. I just pointed to a sign in a room. or they're, you know, they make posters, you know, so they have physical representation of things.
Mm.
And to be fair, like, I guess in the land of, you know, when we do print ads, which are... less and less now, but you know, it's a thing that you can see, that you can hold. You're like, this is mine, mm-hmm. as opposed to a TV spot where you're like just kind of like waiting around. You're like, oh my God, there it is,
pointing at it. I did that.
Which is always the, like, I remember at a young, you know, young in my career, you'd just be sitting and all of a sudden your spot would come on and you're like, there it is, I did that. So yes, there's if you're in kind of normal, I guess, not normal, if you're in like above line advertising, there's less and less physical things that you actually touch that mm-hmm. are made, especially nowadays. It's more digitally focused. So it's a pleasure and a it's awesome to have something that you can hold in your hands and you're like, this is the thing I made. It's right here.
Mm. And you can keep it forever.
I do. I still have some that are like packed away, like never opened. Yeah. I'm like, fresh.
That really, really like makes my brain happy that you have them.
It's like a comic book, but like a Vogue.
Sealed. Unreal. So now you're an executive creative director.
I am.
Was that always the aim?
No. I mean, yeah, it was always kind of far away in my brain. I had become a creative director. I've been a creative director for quite some time. And then a global creative director. And I do feel like I had a skill for leading teams. Mm-hmm. Call myself a mama bear. Like, I'm very much, like, I give people space, but then, like, push. And, like, I have a different leadership style. But I never thought I would be it's imposter syndrome, right? I never thought I was good enough to be an ECD. I'm like, oh, it's just something. I'll just be the best global creative director I can be. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, I'll just rock that role. And then I had two kind of agencies kind of come at me at the same time going like, we'd like you to be an ECD. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, weird. I'm like, okay, so y'all think I'm ready for this.
Yeah, if you think it, I'm not sure.
I'm like, maybe I am. Maybe I am ready to take that next step into, you know, kind of have the vision of an agency rather than just one client or several clients that I'm leading. And it kind of like was the first aha moment that maybe I can do this. I mean, obviously I can. I'm doing it right now. Hopefully, yay, doing a great job. But sometimes you need someone from the outside to say like, I know what you do and I see your worth or your talent. Mm. And I think you should be doing this. And sometimes you need to listen and just go like, again,
just dive in. Yeah.
Dive in.
I was going to say, it's like the kind of kick off the edge that you need to just jump into the pool. And like, it's always, no one wants to live for external validation at all, but sometimes you just need it to be like, you believe in me and you have worked with me and seen what I can do. And you now also believe that I will be able to take this next step. Cool. Like, let's kind of do it together. And I think you need that belief for like wind in your sails a little bit to also think, I'm not just doing this for myself now. Like, there's someone else that wants me to succeed at this. So yeah, let's kind of jump in and go with it type of thing. But yeah, I bet that was a crazy time when you got those approaches of being like, me, what, really?
Little old me. no, it's belief is hard and you can have your self-belief all you want and you can, but you, I think this happens more with women than men, but we almost are our worst enemy sometime holding ourselves back because we're like, well, I've never done that, so how can I do that?
Yeah.
You're like, well, just freaking start doing it, and then you are doing it, you know? Again, let's see, we should actually have a counter how many times I say just dive in, jump in the pool.
You know what? I think I'm going to like put that as a little header for us because it's just, you have to just do it, like just jump in. And then, so big part of your role is leadership, management, that side of things. And I think it seems to be something that you've spoken about a lot and written about a lot. And like, talk to us about that. How do you sort of encompass that in your current role?
I think leadership is different for every person. And you need to figure out, I say leadership style, but that kind of sounds like there's a program that you go through and you figure out like, I'm this type of leader, which I don't think there is. I basically saw different type of leaders. And to be fair, I saw a lot of leaders that I was like, I do not want to be like that. Mm-hmm. And I am a type of creative that can like take like harsh criticism and just like be inspired and be like, I would have been great in the military because I'm like, what? Just tell me what I need to do or yell at me. I can do it. But then I saw people crumble and break apart and not get built back up. And so I'm like, no, I'm going to be the leader who nurtures and cares for the creatives and giving them space to be the people they need to be and make sure that I am pushing them. And some people get pushed harder than others, but like realizing that they're not all the same and you can't just do one size does not fit all with creatives. I mean, we are emotional beasts and we are putting our heart on the line and realizing that they're kind of putting it all out there. And then you're giving feedback. And hopefully it's constructive feedback. And sometimes it needs to be a little bit harsher feedback, but still with a constructive edge to it. And so then I'm like, okay, I'm going to build my own way to lead. And I did have, you know, pitfalls along the way of like, maybe in the beginning, I probably gave too much space mm-hmm. and people kind of took the piss. Like, yeah. And just like, you know, you give them, it's like, what, give them rope and like how much they...
Give an inch, take a mile.
Yeah. Yep. And some people did take a mile and I'm okay. Like, all right, pull it back a little bit. But, you know, I think that's a great thing about having experience in this career is like you learn and you evolve. Mm-hmm. And if you keep doing that, then hopefully by the end of your career, you're like, okay, I made a difference and I found a way that was a really successful leadership style throughout the learning of different experiences.
Yeah, for sure. And how have you found navigating that in a larger agency?
I mean, it may be larger, but they're still individuals. Mm. So it's just kind of compartmentalizing the time that you spend. You can't focus on one thing and get sucked in too deep. Mm-hmm. You need to make sure you're kind of on the top of everything and kind of dipping your toe in and then going like, I need to pull back. And now I need to make sure that this is being handled over here. And that's a hard lesson, especially I'm a maker. So I just want to get in and I want to like, oh, how are we going to craft this? How are we going to, you know, make this thing? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, nope, back off.
Reagan. Let them do it.
Let them do it. And just, you know, and stay up here and like, you know, push where they need to be pushed, give them space when they need space. And I think probably most people, most creatives that go through the journey of, you know, being a junior all the way up to a CD and then an ECD have to go on that similar path. And it's like at a CD level, you can still kind of make a lot more. Mm. But then you want to make sure you're not taking away like the making that should be done by younger. But I do think things have changed in creative where I think CDs need to still be makers mm-hmm. because they have not learned everything they need to learn.
Yeah.
And also, there's not enough people in our industry. I'm going to like, I feel like we're at a lack right now mm-hmm. of numbers and we like everybody needs to get stuck in and do as opposed to some people think they go to CD and then all of a sudden they can just tell other people yeah. what to do. And I'm like, that's not being a CD. CD is, you know, you're still making, you're still learning, but you're also learning how to be a leader. Mm. And you're like on that journey.
Yeah. I think we always sort of look at it as leading by example almost. And yeah. know, like you said, knowing when to sort of jump in and firefight or be a bit more heavy on the doing and when to let people kind of take those steps under your guidance. But I do think at that level, there is almost like a lack of learning that is given. It's just like, well, you're a CD now kind of thing. And actually that must be so hard to navigate and so hard to know when to sort of give up and step back because yeah. that work is your baby and you don't want to. So it's, yeah, it's such a kind of murky water thing that I hope is still progressing.
I do think there's especially the transition between senior creative and CD. There's no playbook that they yeah. give you. They're like, welcome to the world of leading. And you're like, well, shit, now what do I do? And so there are the CDs that are kind of the micromanagers and then the ones that like think that they just sit there at like some sort of weird creative throne and just like tell other people what to do. And then the people who are the makers, but still teaching, like they know that they have a teaching role and helping others. And then they step back and step in. And so it's all kind of learn by doing as opposed to, which I mean, honestly, like if there's like a hole in the industry, it's like, you know, have like more leadership courses on for senior creatives going like, okay, now you want to be a CD. This is the things that you have to tackle. These are yeah. the things you're going to have to handle. Because a lot of it, there is the management of people, but that's when you get like in deep with clients. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's when you should be, you know, you're owning a brand at that point. And that's when like you are the figurehead to build that relationship so the client will jump off a cliff with you yeah, like and go course. Down that creative journey. And like that's a huge part of that role that people forget.
Yeah, I think there are so many like different routes as a CD that who you could be. And like I think also there's not often a lot of space for people to realize which one they actually want or which one is more yeah. relevant to them or makes sense. It's kind of like, this is your job now, go ahead. Yeah. And you kind of touched on it then, but do you think that this industry is less desirable than it once was?
I don't know if it's less desirable, because I think it's changed. It's opened in that there are creators out there, and I mean creators on a social space, mm-hmm. that are like owning it and being reactive and like creating amazing things. They're not just like sitting there talking about a product, holding it up next to their face.
Yeah.
They're literally creating things, you know, visuals that don't exist, you know, creating edits and stuff like that. They're like kind of, they're kind of looking at us going like, I can do that too. And I'm game on.
And I can sometimes do it better.
Yeah. And that's okay. Like, I think we need to be challenged. I think there are endless ways to tell a story. And I think in advertising, we've been kind of honed and crafted to tell a story a certain way. Mm-hmm. And executions obviously are totally different, but we still have been, you know, especially ones who have grown up in the land of like, we only had TV and print, and then we've kind of like gone on the social journey, but we've kind of like gone down the path of like, this is how we tell stories. And there's just another generation saying like, dude, I can do it a different way. And mm-hmm. I could tell a story in a way that breaks all your kind of advertising rules.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's like, actually you see a lot of work from content creators who have created it themselves off their own back. And it's like, whoa, I think there's such a gap of agencies not realizing that, yes, it's competition, but yes, it's healthy, rather than seeing it as we need to continue doing the opposite of them to be different.
Yeah.
It's like, how do we be inspired by them rather than just be scared and be like, let's stay to the way that we know. Like, how do you think that agencies can begin to go on that trajectory to remaining relevant and remaining interesting?
I mean, I think it's being aware of what's going on. Like, it's one of those things that's said kind of just randomly thrown out, but it drives me crazy. Like, oh, I'm not on social. I'm like, yeah, you say you're not on social, and that's okay that you don't physically participate in posting on social. But I see that phone in your hand every moment that you're walking around. So you are on social. You're just like, you're ingesting social, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, participating in it. And even when you comment, actually, you are participating. So it's kind of like learning from what's going on, and also getting new voices in. Like, I am not hiring the same type of creatives. I'm hiring young, diverse creatives that look at things differently. When I look at their books, I'm like, you do the weird and wonderful, and you come from a space or a place that I don't even know about. Mm-hmm. So I want that voice, because I want that different way of solving problems, that different way of storytelling. And by the way, it doesn't need to be crafted. It doesn't need to be perfect. They need time. They need nurturing. They need probably more space than people have time to give, so to speak. But that is the path we're on. If you get someone who's like a little bit more raw, but probably has like that inner fire, like, tell them and show them the ways of how they can make this thing for this client, which will surprise and delight the fucking world. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really exciting. It's an awesome time to be a young creative, because you don't need to be the stereotype of what you needed before.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it takes almost, well, it takes the creative leader to realize like the labor and the time and the nurturing and the effort and everything that you need to put into someone to then get that potential that you saw out of them in the best ways. And it's actually kind of taking that step back off a high horse a little bit and saying, I could learn from you, and I really need to learn from you. And yeah. Also my clients will learn from you and actually want your thinking, because the work is just, it's so much more relevant and organic than it ever would have been if you were staying on that path of like, well, they're the enemy, we don't want to bring them in,
right,
type of thing. And
we do need to speak the language. There's the communication on social is so different. If you even the different platforms, if you look like Twitter, which basically I just call a hate platform where people just complain.
They were like, but, what even
but
is that anymore?
There is funny, like, you know, there's banters between brands and stuff like that. There's a voice, a ton of voice that's over there. Mm. Where if you look at, you know, Instagram, it's a little bit more polished, definitely more photo driven. Like, you know, it has that kind of look and feel. Then TikTok is like the, just the fun, the joy, the like spontaneity, the crazy. And it's just like, you have to dive in and know the voice that you're speaking in each of those platforms. And to be relevant, not that I think a brand should change their tone of voice, mm-hmm. but just the way they communicate their tone of voice, you know, should be relevant for each one of those. And it's just, you know, getting someone who's, you know, 20 years old and it spends like going down wormholes of TikTok every single day, probably knows that tone of voice pretty damn well.
Oh, yeah.
And can actually, you know, then can take a brief and go like, well, this is how we do it here, mm. where I try to stay as relevant as possible. But I'm also a mom, you know, I have a lot of other things on my plate. That's made clear. I do still go down a TikTok wormhole once in a while, but probably not as often as they do.
Yeah.
And so like I can, and by the way, that voice, I'm mimicking that voice rather than they're having an authentic voice because that's from them. So it's, I think we have so much to learn from the new way people are creating.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You're mimicking the voice, not authentically the voice, which that's just like made my brain be like, phew, because it's so obvious when you say it, but it's not obvious at all until it's pointed out of like, this is why we need that audience in. We need them on the inside to then help us create it on the outside. And how do you think being super active on social, like you mentioned you're an influencer, how has that been as like part of doing it then on the work side of things as well?
Well, I think it allows you to dive in deep to the platform. Mm-hmm. So you kind of hack the system from the back end, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know how the algorithm works. You know how like what engages people, what doesn't. But you're learning it from, it's just a different space. So then when you take it to a brand level, you're like, okay, so I know that, you know, engagement in the eyes in the beginning, first few seconds will help like people stay and stop the scroll for, you know, hopefully enough time that I could kind of bring them into the storytelling. It's just little things like that maybe you wouldn't know as much when you're looking from the outside in. It's like looking from the inside out. It's just different perspective. Mm. And it's like you take that kind of, and plus it's fun. Like it's a hobby. And I do feel like people, all creatives should have like a side hustle mm-hmm. where they're expressing their creativity in another way, because it can get exhausting that you're using all your creativity to answer this someone else's problem rather than to inspire you to do new things. So if you're a creative out there, get a side hustle.
Yeah, I think side hustles are always, I don't know, everyone kind of looks not like down at them, but it's always like, oh, cool, you got a side hustle. Like, what are you doing? Whereas actually, why are they not being empowered and being utilized and like harvest as an outlet to let your brain do something else for a little while and like be part of a different community outside of just your work and everything that encompasses that? Because, yeah, it's draining and you need to have something to take your brain completely away from it.
I think it's because side hustle got kind of a bad rap where it's like, I'm doing so much. How can I actually spend my time doing something? Like, you don't have to be like an influencer in mm-hmm. your side hustle. You could be like, I like gardening. That could be your side hustle. Mm-hmm. And I just, doesn't mean you have to open a garden shop. You don't have to go that far. It's just something that is something else you enjoy doing that is not the work.
Yeah.
It's different than the work. And it could be an outlet of creativity. For instance, if you're a designer and you do art and you make posters and stuff like that to sell, like that technically is a side hustle that actually has a paying aspect, mm. which is similar to your day job, but it's still it's a creative outlet. Mm. But it could be something totally different, like gardening or, you know, I don't know why I'm like in my head, like shearing cats in like weird shapes. I don't like...
If you find someone who does that, please let me know. But yeah, it's just a creative outlet. And I actually, when I'm chatting with creatives or looking at portfolios or whatever, I will always look to see if there's something, because it's also just another thing that you get to know the person more rather than just the work of what they've done. And it's like, oh my God, you share cats. Well, this person at this agency also shares cats. Like, this is going to be excellent. Do you know what I mean? It's just an extra point. And something that is you and not what the industry has molded you to be or to sound like, which, yeah, I'm always like the weird stalker, but like, I've seen you've done this. People are like, you're crazy.
But I love that. I love getting into like the mind of the creative, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yes, I will go on the Sheercat thing. Sheercats is a thing I do. And you're like, you know what? I don't get it, but I'm into it.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Oh God, I can't stop thinking about shearing cats now. Like, do you know if something's gonna be in your head all day? And it's like, I'm never ever getting rid of that. What is the big question? What is something that just really frustrates you about this industry?
The complacency to evolve. Agencies get big and they get slow, and we're all saying the same thing. We need to evolve. We need to, we need to rethink how we come up with creative, how we tell our stories. And then when you actually get into the process, it's like turning a giant chip, mm-hmm. like trying to turn the Titanic. And so the process bogs down the evolution of something, and it's infuriating, but being my American self, it will not stop me, and I will keep on evolving and keep like pushing us to be, keeping up with what's going on in culture, because like evolve or die, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think there's a kind of like, surviving in creativity that we used to talk about, and I don't want to survive. I want to thrive, and I want all my creatives to thrive in how they're progressing and how they're, again, telling their stories and how we're solving problems for our clients, because that is what we do. We solve problems. We do it through telling stories, or just buy one, get one free, which, sometimes you got to do. That's what I'm saying. But there's the evolution mm-hmm. of how we do that.
Yeah. And I think that just comes from pioneering leaders, really, doesn't it? But also I think it does come from grassroots and like people being able to, being given the position to enter the industry to push that evolution quicker. Because actually I think there is such still a blocker at that level of like, I kind of don't get what you do, so I'm just going to go with someone that I know and I'm used to.
You're going to go for the familiar.
Yeah.
Fuck that. No, go for the scary. Mm-hmm. Go for the weird, the wonderful. Like, I love when someone shows me something I've never seen before. I mean, literally, like, I get like heart eyes. I'm like, what? Mind blown. Like, and it could be something totally simple, but it's just that constant curiosity of like how we do things. It's fascinating. And like, I am such an ad nerd. I mean, I honestly love what I do, mm-hmm. and I love the creation and the talent that we have that is in this industry. And I think those passionate creatives, we want to keep moving mm-hmm. and keep changing and someone show me the next thing. Mm. Show me the next thing that's going to excite me. I mean, remember when we all got excited about flash mob dancing? I mean, honestly, that was as big as we could go, but it was still something different. But now, you do something and it's like, now we have like fake out of home that's coming in. And still I'm like, bravo, mm-hmm. like something different.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it takes someone to embrace that rather than be just completely terrified.
Yeah.
Because there is such like a fine line, but it's like excitement and anxiety are the same emotion. It's just your brain. So it's like actually lean into the heart eyes emoji rather than like the spiral eyes emoji, which is now a firm favorite. Thank you, Apple, for releasing that one. So we're at the part what everyone loves, the stinky fish part. Mm. And we ask our lovely guests to bring something that they just hate. I'm so intrigued of what yours is going to be.
I don't know if you picked this up, but I'm a pretty positive person. So I'm going to go with negativity.
Okay.
Because A, I don't like to, I need to talk about something in the abstract. I can't talk about a thing, or because then I feel like you're trash talking, and mm-hmm. that's just not my jam at all. So I'll talk about an emotion that I do think can be a virus, and it can bring people down, and but what about this? But not in a curiosity way, mm-hmm. in a just like, here's a roadblock, here's a roadblock, here's a roadblock. And I'm like, oh, if you just, you just stopped, and maybe it's my yoga self, if you just stopped and like pushed it away, like there is a path that will lead to the answer, but you are making it difficult by just focusing on the wrong things, the negative things, the like, it's not enough money, it's not enough time, it's not enough this. I'm like, dude, let's look at those as like a challenge. Mm. Like, cool, you put me in this little box. I'm going to rock it. Or like, yeah, it's not enough time. Let's see what we can do. And maybe that becomes the story that we sell on how fast we actually created this thing. Like, I just wish, like, if I had like one power in the world, it would be to take negativity away from people and just let them be able to like kind of like rid the clouds and see the light. I do say a lot that my world is sunshine and rainbows, but I will not apologize for being positive. And positivity spreads also, but like awesomeness.
Yeah. And it's like such a weird sense of when people get negativity for being so positive. And it's like, well, actually, if you just lent into this, then you wouldn't be being negative about it. Like, it, allow the infectiousness of it type of thing. And I think, yeah, it's so easy to get almost bogged down into that headspace. Well, it's not going to work because of this. But I think Ollie, who founded Unknown, he'll absolutely love the shout out because it's a positive one, of course. He always says, if you're coming at something with a negative angle, then you have to give a positive other thing that you could do instead. So, no, I'm unsure about this. How about we tackle it this way? Or how about we move forward in this sense? And I think that's something he's really bred into Unknown, and now how all of us sort of foresee problems, and there's always going to be something negative in your head, but actually, how do you overcome that with the sunshines and rainbows?
Well, Ollie sounds super smart. There's a shout out to him. But it is, yeah, it's the path of clearing it out. If then, like, this is a problem, like, okay, well, then something positive to countersuit that. I mean, I think, again, Ollie, genius.
But let's not shout him out.
Okay, let's not shout him out too much. All right.
He's going to absolutely love it. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Reagan. It's been amazing. I don't think I've ever spoken about sharing cats quite so much, especially at 9 a.m. in a morning. But you know what? I'm into it. And maybe I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, this has been awesome. Thanks, Molly. Thank you for having me.
Been a pleasure.